Hello, The Colloquial is a podcast brought to you by 関西学院 University 東京丸の内 Campus.
こんにちは。Welcome to The Colloquial Podcast.
We are your hosts, Kangaku Taro and Tamago.
We are both full of curiosity and motivated to learn about the world.
In each episode, we will contact people all over the world and talk about their countries. We will discuss everything from arts and culture to sports and current events.But unlike the news on TV, we will talk to regular people like you and me. We think there's a lot to learn from people we don't normally see on TV. We plan to release episodes every 2 weeks. We hope you enjoy them. If you want us to cover a particular country or topic, please contact us and let us know. This week, Taro was in his hometown in Washington, D.C., where he traveled for 2 weeks.Tamago called him to see how he was doing and to talk about his impressions there. Enjoy the show.
Hello, Taro-san.
Hello, Tamago-san.
This is Tamago. So, you got DC, right?
Yes, I arrived safely.
Mm-hmm. So, please tell me, I'm kind of curious, the people who live in DC, how they react about the COVID-19 or how the atmosphere there, so please tell me.
Yeah, the whole trip was very, very unusual. I'm used to traveling all the time internationally, but this was so strange because the airport in Haneda was completely empty, very, very few people. So it's a bit strange, but on the good side, everything was super fast. You can go through immigration and security and check-in. Everything takes like a few minutes only. But on the other side, like most of the shops are closed or they open very late. So you really have to look for a place to have a coffee or a snack. And then I boarded the plane. Of course, very few people on the plane and it felt very safe. And we landed first in Houston, Texas. And that was also, it was nice for me to be back in the States. And same, I landed. At security, it was really interesting because once they find out you're coming from Tokyo, there's no issues. They just say, okay, please go ahead. If you're coming from Tokyo, from Japan, no worries. Like, we don't need to check. We don't need to search. There's very high. Yeah.
I didn't expect that.
Yeah. It was really funny. Immigration and customs both had the same reaction. You're coming from Tokyo, then just go ahead. Don't worry. And then... Once you enter the airport, you realize you're in the U.S. So there's a lot of like junk food restaurants.
And they open?
Yeah, like not many were not open, but a few that were open is like Jack in the Box or like one place was like a hamburger place.
And so this you was feel like that I'm home.
This was really early in the morning, and so you see these pictures of like huge burger with like avocado, another burger with like barbecue sauce. I'm like, wow, I cannot believe people can have such a breakfast, right? So it's really big, and people there were actually eating and drinking and French fries and everything for like 8 a.m. It was unbelievable. And the flight from Houston to Washington, D.C. was like a little bit less than 3 hours. Again, we landed in D.C. Everything was super fast. And my friend picked me up from the airport. And that's when I really started to notice the difference between the way America has dealt with corona and the way Japan has dealt with corona. Here, it's a combination of things. Like number one, I think a lot of people are very stressed out because of the economic situation. When you drive into DC, even driving from the airport to DC, which is usually about 40 minutes, there's not that much traffic. So that was unusual. And then inside DC, you can see shops either they're out of business or they are boarded up.
Because of the COVID-19?
No, they were expecting some riots or protests, and they were worried that some people might break the windows or something like that because there's been some protests across America recently. Not so much, but yes, there was some. So it's enough that many businesses decide, especially a downtown area, they decided to protect their shops. But on the other hand, of course, DC is a very beautiful city, trees everywhere. This is something I noticed more this time after being in Tokyo for almost a year without traveling.
Yeah.
It's super green here.
And now the busy season, right?
Yeah, it's like beginning of the fall. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of interesting because here the streets are wider than in Tokyo. And so there's a lot of space for trees everywhere on both sides of the sidewalk. And yeah, so it's really nice. And also, DC by law doesn't have very high buildings. You're not allowed to have high rise buildings.
Yeah.
It's super sunny and you can, I don't know, it's just very, very nice to be here.
So the people are wearing the mask in DC?
Yeah, actually, DC has the highest rate of people wearing masks in America. Uh-huh. And so basically 99% of the people here wear masks.
Wow,
but,
more than Japan, right?
same as Japan, but the funny thing is like whereas Tokyo is normal, right? So everybody's going to work like normal, they get on the metro. The only difference is like we don't have so many tourists in Tokyo this year.
Mm-hmm.
In the US, people are really taking it to extreme level. So my friends are coming to meet with me, but they prefer to be outside in the park or take a walk. Like they don't want to be inside the cafe or inside a restaurant. So if they go to a restaurant, they really want to be in the terrace.
Wait. So because of you coming from Tokyo or the, you know, it's general?
No, it's general. This is their life now. Yeah, this is their life. So one thing that's also different in the US is that we don't have national health insurance like in Japan. So basically if somebody gets corona, it can be very expensive for them. So the other thing, like one of my friends in Tokyo was diagnosed with corona. Mm. And so he told me that actually he called the corona hotline and they sent him a taxi to take him to a hotel and they left him in the hotel for 10 days and gave him food and everything. And everything was paid by the national insurance, which is the standard procedure in Japan.
Yeah.
Well, when you tell an American like that this is what happens in Japan, they are really impressed because it's not what happens in the US. And of course, you have the presidential election. There's basically three layers of stress. One is corona, the second is the economy, and the third is the presidential election.
Yeah, how about the presidential election?
Yeah, like they're waiting for the results now, but it looks like Biden's gonna win. Yeah, but we have to wait for the official results and for them to finish the counting. And so DC is like a 95% Democrat, so very, very few Republicans in Washington. So. Mm-hmm. Basically, the views here are a little bit not representative of the country.
So do you think choose the president is difficult for this time?
The feeling among the Democrats and a lot of independents is that Trump has really done so much damage to the political culture in the U.S., that they need someone with experience and someone they know and someone who's has a reputation for being decent. Mm-hmm. And that's why Biden won the Democratic primary.
It's amazing. Still, the people are voting to, you know, Trump.
Yes, I think a lot of people were shocked by it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are angry with the pollsters because, the expectation was that Biden will win relatively easily and that the Democrats will take control of the Senate and also expand their control in the House of Representatives. So Senate, it doesn't seem like they will take control of the Senate. And the House of Representatives, it looks like they actually lost some seats. Mm-hmm. And the presidential election, Biden, it seems like he will still win, and maybe he will win by large number of electoral votes. But still, for some time, it appears to be quite close. And again, so many of the analysts said that on election night, it might look like Trump won, because his supporters voted on that day and they're not counting absentee ballots or mail-in ballots or et cetera. And the next day it will start to turn. And that's exactly what happened. But I think even then, people didn't expect it to be so close.
Wow. So when we can see the result? I mean,
I don't know. I was hoping today we will have so, because basically right now, if Biden wins Nevada, mm-hmm. He can reach 270. But somehow Nevada, like every day they say maybe tomorrow. So at least the media is saying hopefully tomorrow. So I don't know. Maybe by Friday. I hope by Friday we will know, but it's not clear. But yeah, basically, most likely Biden has won. So.
Mm-hmm. So the choice is the Trump or the not the Trump or Biden, more like yeah. that, you know, businessman or the politician, something like that.
Yeah, or as you said, like Trump or no Trump. So I think in many ways it was really about Trump and people who wanted to continue with Trump and people who basically want anybody else but Trump.
Next, Taro and Tamago spoke with award-winning American journalist Mark Taralo. He is based in Washington, D.C., and is very well informed about current events and politics in the United States. Enjoy the conversation.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Pierre.
So, Mark, I want to introduce you to my co-host, Tamago.
Hello, Mark.
Tamago and Taro.
Hello, Max, and thank you for coming to our podcast.
Can you? Oh, sure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, so first of all, I want to ask you about the situation of the COVID-19 in the United States. Like, your first question is how do children understand the COVID-19 situation and how they respond about the situation? And then so the children means like a school age.
Well, you know, from relatives of mine, you know, nieces and nephews and kids that I've known, I think it's pretty hard for them to kind of understand it fully. Because in part, they, when they hear things about a virus, they're not entirely sure what that is. And they're also confused, some of them, that the ones that know virus can make you a little sick, they get confused as to how serious COVID is.
Oh, yeah.
That it's actually a deadly virus, because for a lot of kids, they've never encountered that before. And then I think from a behavior point of view, it's hard because most kids want to just run around and play with their friends.
Same in the
and this whole thing about keeping distance and wearing a mask, that really goes against their natural inclination. So that's hard.
I understand. Wow. So same in Japan. So the school is open now or they're still shut down?
A lot of them are closed, but they're they're kind of doing it here on a state-by-state basis. So some are open, some are closed, some are just doing remote learning, some are doing some combinations of some remote, some classroom, some outdoor. So one of the key things here in the U.S. is there's no real national policy for this. It's generally a state-by-state policy.
So children has a stress out from the COVID-19 situation in the United States. Yeah.
And of course, you have a lot of situations where parents are working at home.
Yes, yeah.
Some of the kids are using remote learning, so they're home too. And that's strange for kids and stressful for parents. So that can be a very difficult situation for families.
Oh, even in the United States?
Yes, because you know what happens often, and I have many, many friends with kids that are in this situation.
Yeah.
Parents are working at home.
Mm-hmm.
If they have young children, they feel like they have to watch the kids too.
Yeah, right.
So the parents get very stressed out, mm-hmm. because of trying to do both work and childcare. And that stress impacts their parenting.
Oh, I see.
And the kids feel that. A mutual friend of ours, his child has asthma.
Oh.
The parents are really trying to keep him isolated. And that's hard for a kid to be isolated. Because he's young. He just loves playing with his friends.
Yeah, I see. Well, thank you.
Mark, do you feel like people in the U.S. have started to deal with COVID better compared to, let's say, several months ago?
That's a really interesting question. On one hand, you could say a lot of people, I think, are starting to get into the groove of this is how life is now. But on the other hand, you definitely get, I think, a good amount of people who just are like, I am so done with this. Like, I wish it was over and I'm getting really sick of it. And that, in fact, as you both know, we're in the midst of still having an election. Yeah. And there have been people have been talking that was a factor in the election, where some people are like, I am going to vote for the Republicans because they're more pro, let's open things up, no more lockdowns. And some people are just sick of the restrictions.
But I think more people voted against the Republicans because of the corona situation.
That's very true. However, the polls had, you know, a huge amount of people voting against the Republicans. And as it turned out, people still did, but much less. And so there's some theory that what they call anti-lockdown sentiment affected that shift.
Actually, this is a nice segue to our next topic, which is the U.S. elections. So I think one of the big stories is the relative failure of pollsters to get it right this time. And this is the second time in a row. 2016 was similar. They were wrong about the ultimate outcome of the election. Or let's just say maybe they were not 100% wrong, but certainly they didn't expect it. How do you feel about this round and how pollsters performed?
As you said, it's kind of now two strikes in a row. And it's interesting, the theories that are going around about why that is, because some people are saying, well, if you look at the midterm election in between 2016 and this election, the polls were much more on target. And so there's a theory that these polling errors specifically have something to do with Trump himself. For some reason, it's really hard for pollsters to accurately measure his support. Like I said, several theories. One, some of them are kind of funny, but they may have some truth. One is that pollsters generally do polling over the phone. And the question then becomes, who wants to talk to the pollsters and who will just hang up on them? And anti-Trump people generally love to talk trash about Trump. So the theory goes, they're happy to talk to a pollster for an hour and just criticize Trump. Whereas pro-Trump people, they much less likely to talk on the phone about their support. They may just hang up on a pollster. That's one theory going around.
Right. So just to for the audience, the midterm elections were held in 2018, and those were congressional elections, not presidential, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
So back to the polling issue. So if that is the case, that over the phone polling is not as effective because you get different reactions from different types of voters, what is the point of publishing those polling results if it's clear that there's a behavioral difference which is impacting the results of these polls?
And that's going to, exactly what you said, is moving forward is going to be a big issue, because this time round, the 2016 polling errors, there were some people who thought maybe that's just a one-off. But not only that, most of the polling companies after 2016, when they were called out on the carpet, said, okay, we've made all these changes in our methodologies, so we should be in much better shape for 2020. That turned out to be not the case. So now with the two errors moving forward, you know, there are people saying some people will never trust polling again.
Right. Certainly I have reservations. So Mark, let's talk about the counting process, and I guess people in Japan understand what the Electoral College is. I have a feeling everyone in the world now understands what the Electoral College is, but maybe tell us a bit, if you'd like, the history of the Electoral College, what brought it about, and then we can talk about why that means counting is taking so long, and the fact that Biden is 4 million votes ahead of Trump, but we're still not sure whether he won the election or not.
Sure. Well, the history, in brief, is that the Electoral College was a compromise. What you had is when the founding fathers, and they're called that because there were, back then there were no women involved, unfortunately, but the founding fathers who were trying to decide how the president would be elected, there was a split. And one group said, let's have a popular vote. Everybody votes and the candidate with the most vote wins. Another group said, no, that's no good, because we have, for instance, a lot of farmers in rural areas. They don't have access to information. We can't trust their vote. And also, you'll have these demagogue-type candidates who attract the mob, and they may get the most votes, but we don't. That's not going to be good for the country to go with that. So the other group said, let's have members of Congress elect the president. But the problem with that is some people thought, well, that's going to be too insidery. We can't just have members of Congress doing that. So the compromise was, let's create this intermediary system of the Electoral College that represents each state, but yet it's a different method from the popular vote.
And so the idea was to create some kind of balance.
Exactly. And it wasn't that, you know, in the real world, when you look at, when historians look back at the Constitutional Convention, it wasn't like this was considered such a brilliant idea, but they were really at an impasse and they needed a compromise. And this was kind of the best compromise they could come up with.
And now, or at least for the last 20 or so years, perhaps beginning with the Gore versus Bush Jr. election, it's happened a couple of times, and there's a risk that it's going to happen more, where the winner of the popular vote is not necessarily the winner of the Electoral College vote. Can you tell us why that's happening more frequently in these times?
Now you have a situation where the population of the states is really changing. And some of the bigger states like California, they're really still growing. So they're disproportionate to what the result of the Electoral College vote. You could have a huge amount of people in a state like California vote for the Democrats, but all that in the final count of the Electoral College, that's only reflected in the number of electoral votes that California has. And whether California is won by one vote or whether California is won by 5 million vote, the electoral vote amount is the same. So it's not, doesn't keep up with the actual population or the popular vote. And right. A lot of people don't like that and think that's very unfair.
So one issue is because the electoral college votes per state are winner take all, except for two states, correct?
Exactly.
And so one of the proposals now is to make it proportional.
That's right. And there's two ways to make change here. One, since the electoral college system is enshrined in the Constitution, one is a constitutional amendment. That almost happened back in, I believe it was 1970. To change the Constitution like that with an amendment, you need a two-thirds vote. And back then it passed the House, but it didn't pass the Senate. But what can, the way change can also be brought about another way is for the state legislatures to try to change the electoral system on their end. And that's a movement that's happening now.
And so Nebraska and I think Maine have a system where they look at the total number of popular votes and then they apportion electoral votes accordingly.
That's right.
So I have a question. So what are you most concerned about after the election? Then for me, the people are divided. What are you most concerned about after the election? What do you think?
What you said, Tomoko, is one of my big concerns about how divided the country is. There's a couple factors there. It very much looks like Joe Biden will ultimately be the next president. Mm-hmm. And because this getting to the final conclusion is taking a while, there will be a lot of bad feeling on the other side. But I think what really compounds the problem of what I'm worried about is that when you add in the rise of technology and social media like Facebook and Twitter, there's more and more bad information, what people call disinformation or misinformation, being spread. And I think that once Biden becomes president, people who don't support him will be sending out a lot of disinformation about him that to try to make him and his policies look bad and spread a lot of false rumors about him. And the problem with that is that a lot of people in the US don't follow politics closely, so they'll believe disinformation, they'll believe the bad rumors. And you'll have a situation where there's all this anger and bad feeling, and a lot of it is based on false information. And it's just not it's just an unhealthy situation in general.
So means the technology affect a lot in this situation.
Yes, especially with the younger people, obviously they're on, but really now, even older people are often on Facebook. Maybe they're on Instagram less or Twitter less, but Facebook a lot. And a lot of the political groups, they're very adept at manipulating Facebook and sending out misinformation on it. And we were talking briefly about the polling error. It was kind of known that the Republicans, under their former campaign manager, Brad Parscale, they were more adept at working with Facebook than the Democrats. And so some people feel, even though this campaign manager, Brad Parscale, was kind of demoted at the end, he was still involved, and their Facebook operation was incredibly successful. And that may be one of the reasons why the Republicans did better than the pollsters thought.
So you don't think that the Democrats were able to catch up?
What?
Sorry. Sorry, Americans are very loud. Sorry about that.
The Democrats have plenty of people that are adept at technology, but they don't play as much hardball, especially with the technology, in terms of the disinformation and the misinformation. The Republican groups really work that.
Okay, and then actually in this round of elections, we saw a lot of Republicans actually siding with the Democrats, like the Lincoln Project or Republicans for Biden. And so what do you think, what kind of game did they play?
The Lincoln Project was kind of known as being the gold standard in terms of persuasion ad. Incredibly effective, incredibly impressive ads. The thing about the Lincoln Project, however, is that they represented a really small sliver of Republicans who turned against Trump in that way. So numbers only, they were kind of small. The second thing is that although technically the Lincoln Project ads were, like I said, the gold standard, there's a real question of how many minds you can change in a very polarized country. And so one theory is that when it comes to just the pure vote count, it's more effective not to change minds or to try to persuade, but to try to get people who sometimes vote and sometimes don't, the occasional voters who don't follow politics that closely. There's a huge pool of them. And the Republicans, especially with the digital operation, were known as being effective at hitting those people.
Right. So actually, we have some breaking news. The reason why there's a bit of noise outside my apartment in Washington, D.C., it looks like Biden has won Pennsylvania and therefore has won the election. It's actually just been reported a few minutes ago by the New York Times. Biden defeats Trump as Pennsylvania put him over the top.
That's definitely big news. This is a historic podcast, guys.
Exactly. We just made history, Tamago.
Save this recording.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mark, we asked everyone the same question. What news stories or current events or any kind of event going on in your country do you think that the international audience or Japanese audience should know more about that is underreported or unreported?
What I think will be happening in the near future, and a lot of people really have yet to come to grips with this, is how artificial intelligence is going to affect the economy and the jobs market. Some people speculate that we've just had, you know, 20 years of big changes because of the rise of technology, and how that's, some people have lost their jobs because of that, how it's changed the economy. But artificial intelligence may be the cause of white collar workers losing their jobs. And that could have not only huge ramifications for the economy, but also for politics too. So I would say stay tuned, and you'll be hearing a lot more about that in the near future.
And maybe more about universal basic income.
Definitely. And that will be, COVID really accelerated the discussion with that. So that's very much more on the table now.
All right. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was a lot of fun, guys.
All right. We're super happy. Thank you so much.
So, Taro-san, this is the end of the first conversation. I really enjoy it. How about you?
I also enjoyed it a lot. It was so much fun to talk to Mark-san, eh?
Yes, it was. We hope you, our listeners, also enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening and stay tuned for our next episode coming soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.